I'm going to call to order the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. And it is February 13th, 2017. And welcome. We have we should have fun because this is going to be talking about parks today. But I also want to, at the very, very end, I'll talk about a couple of other things. But the public hearing is on HB 5028. It's relating to Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And we're going to sit here and hear about some of the great places that we should be instead of sitting in here.
Why don't we take it outside?
I'm going to ask, I'm not sure who's going to start. MG? I'm opening up a public hearing on HB 5028. Sorry. Thank you. Introductions? You need to do an introduction. I'm just getting used to this. Thank you very much. And this is my.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. Yes, we are early in the process. Members of the subcommittee, just as a quick overview from the Legislative Fiscal Office, all of the documents for the today's hearing are on OLIS. They include today's agenda, a copy of the governor's budget for Department of Parks and Recreation, a budget review document from the Legislative Fiscal Office, a copy of the agency presentation materials, and a copy of the CFO or DAS presentation for the agency. So just as I'm going to do a real quick introduction and go over some of highlights of the agency and what's coming up in the governor's budget that you'll be hearing from the agency today. So the State Parks and Recreation Department operates under the direction of a 7-member commission. Parks manages state park lands covering about 110,000 acres, 58 campgrounds, 256 day use areas, including some campgrounds, 1,000 miles of recreation trails, 362 miles of ocean shore, and additional special sites such as boating, fishing docks, group meeting halls, interpretive centers. Museums, 2 historic inns. The programs include the Ocean Shores Protection, Scenic Waterways, Willamette River Greenway, recreation trails, all-terrain vehicle programs, recreation grants to counties and local governments, state park land use, and outdoor recreation planning. The Parks Director is also designated as the Historic Preservation Officer and oversees the activities of the Oregon Heritage Commission and Oregon Commission on Historic Cemeteries. OPRD operating revenues come primarily from dedicated lottery revenues and park user fees. The park user fees are assumed to increase by about $4.7 million, and lottery revenues are assumed to increase by $5.3 million over the prior biennium. OPRD is projecting beginning lottery funds balanced $7 million higher for 2017-19 biennium than anticipated by the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget, and the agency's reallocated expenditures between these primary operating fund sources to reflect the change in available revenues. The shift in the fund source does result in a structural imbalance to the agency's lottery funds, whereby the expenditures of lottery funds are anticipated to outstrip their lottery fund revenues by a little over $5 million at the current service level and $11 million if all the governor's budget items were approved as presented. The governor's budget contains 3 major components, and it's an increased expenditure limitation for maintenance and operational items, costs that exceeded the standard inflationary rates or for items that require additional attention. And it also establishes appropriate limitation for anticipated grant funds, both federal and state, and it accounts for increased staffing levels. 2 proposals in the governor's budget that you'll be hearing are increased revenues. The first is a possible increase in overall user fees by initiating a variable pricing mechanism governed by an average rate set in statute, and that has companion legislation, House Bill 2318, that makes the required statutory changes. And the second item is for an incremental increase to the overnight camping rates that equates to about $2 a night per camping site or yurt. So today we have with us the Director of Parks, Lisa Assumption, the Deputy Director, M.G. Devereaux, and perhaps if we can get to it, the Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer, Christine Kern.
Okay. We good?
Thank you, yes.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lisa Sumption, the director at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And Matt, I think we can conclude. I think you've covered our entire presentation in like 2 minutes. So we're here to present to your 17-19 budget for the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The agency provides, as Matt said, parks and manages the entire 363-mile coastline from border to border. We administer the State Scenic Waterway Program. We award tens of millions of dollars to local communities, and we deliver heritage services to Oregon communities throughout the state, historic preservation office, and a wide range of grant and mini consulting services. The agency, as Mr. Sainer mentioned, is governed by a 7-member commission, which is appointed by the governor, Senate confirmed. The commission hires the department director, which I have had the privilege of serving since 2014, but I've been proudly with the agency since 2007. This presentation is not going to go through the entire budget. Rather, we're going to highlight some key focus areas and try to leave as much time for actual discussion as possible. We're going to take you through our purpose, display the top-level budget, and we're going to talk about some trends we see in our field. Our most visible responsibility is our state park system, and we'll share information about its performances and its challenges and opportunities. We have an active role outside the park system through our grant award programs and heritage-related services. These programs benefit every community in Oregon. Think about a skate park or a boat dock or all kinds of great community opportunities. Finally, we're going to discuss the key big picture issues and how we propose to lead our way through them. OPRD is Oregon's heritage and outdoor recreation leader, and these programs are Oregon's ideals. They're connected deeply to our identity as an Oregonian. The state park system began in 1922 as part of the highway system under the Oregon Department of Transportation. More than merely land managers, the agency's always been close to people. Even our first state park was donated by a Willamette Valley resident, Sarah Helmlich, which we still have the Sarah Helmlich Park just south of Monmouth. After establishing the State Historic Preservation Office in 1967, Oregon created a first-of-its-kind incentive in 1975 to help property owners protect their property. When Oregon voters dedicated lottery funds to improve state parks, they also established a strong local community grants program, but the department also uses other sources of funding to deliver $42.9 million in the current biennium, which is about 20% of our biennial budget. Most recently, the new Main Street program provides funding to revitalize historic downtowns. Now the state park system has around 100 million visitors every biennium. And when you add people in Oregon communities served by grants and heritage programs, it's clear that we have a very strong personal relationship with Oregonians. Through all the changes in the last 95 years, since 1922, our essential mission hasn't changed. We continue to protect Oregon's most special places, provide the most greatest experiences to people possible, and we take the long view to sustain the system over time and to equip our staff to be able to carry out our mission. So, as Mr. Sainer mentioned, we have three fund sources that support our public services. Other funds come from park visitor revenue and a share of the recreation vehicle registration fund. Lottery fund was dedicated by Oregon voters in 1998 and in 2010, both approved by very wide margins, and it dedicates 15% of the lottery net proceeds to the Parks and Natural Resource Fund, which is split evenly between us and Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. A small amount of federal grants goes mostly to the grants and heritage programs. Except for federal funds, these revenues are driven by choices made by Oregon consumers. In the short and medium term, they can be volatile due to the economy and the weather. In the longer term, they can be affected by population dynamics, and most critically, our ability to provide a rewarding park experience when those visitors show up. This budget doesn't propose new revenue sources to support the park system, but it does include a request for a slight increase to the camping rates in order to keep pace with the market.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, for the record, my name is M.G. Devereaux, the Deputy Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. We spend the vast majority of our funding on direct services to Oregonians and grants to the communities that we serve. Non-government organizations and others take advantage of those so they can serve their local needs. A few dramatic trends drove the choices that are presented in this budget today. Park satisfaction is high. We have a good reputation as a system, and recent investments to update park facilities and programs is a swing in the right direction for service to Oregon. Thanks to these investments, economic conditions, and favorable weather, state park visits are climbing, up 20% in just a few years. To put that in perspective, we are serving nearly more than 10 million more visitors a year from the previous biennium. That's 2.5 times the population of Oregon. The best park experiences happen because we have healthy, natural places, well-run facilities, and the right number of enthusiastic, well-trained staff that are helped by volunteers. This growth pattern that we're seeing is not a spike. It appears to be a long-term trend. Our revenue is driven by things that we can't influence, like the economy and the weather. But we also can't affect some of the choices people make, but we manage the system to earn respect and public affection. People who find their state park visits valuable become repeat customers and share their enthusiasm with friends and family. Our ability to earn revenue is reliant on staff, the right number with the right skills. Revenue doesn't always rise with visits, since most state park visits are free, and increases under the current rate structure rarely keep up with inflation and the cost of an aging system. We see a need for a faster and more flexible control over rates, mindful of the need to keep it affordable and accessible, and a small adjustment to the base camping rates for RVs and special accommodations like yurts and cabins. Our customers tell us constantly that they prefer small, constant updates rather than long, stagnant periods followed by very sharp increases to our rates. Overall, we need to innovate on the service side, rebuild frontline staff, and get creative power over the rates in order to thrive. So now we'll go into detail for a couple of our major programs. The label direct service in our budget mostly means the state park system and the supporting functions, plus some recreation coordination projects outside this park the park system boundary, like the Ocean Shores and the Scenic Waterway systems. Development is mostly repairs and improvements, with a small amount of growth through new property acquired from trades, partnerships, or purchases from willing sellers. As Mr. Sander mentioned earlier, the Oregon Park State Park System contains 255 parks and assorted other properties on 109,000 acres. We are small but mighty. For comparison's sake, Oregon's only national park, Crater Lake, is almost twice as large as the entire state park system. And again, for a little context, at 183,000 acres, it only attracts 800,000 visitors a year. For comparison, Silver Falls receives over 1 million visits a year, Fort Stevens almost 1.4 to 5 million visits a year, and Pilot Butte and Bend 900,000 visits a year. We rank 30th in the nation for acreage, but third for daytime visits and sixth for camping. The estimated 100 million visitors a biennium bring people to Oregon's rural landscapes, affecting 13,000 jobs, contributing as much as $886 million to local economies, and adding $1.1 million to local and state lodging taxes. We provide camp – well, we provide camp – no, that's right.
That's right.
We provide camping, hiking, fishing, boating, kite flying, historic tours, picnicking, places to paint or take photos, to write, beach coating, and this is really going to be a long list, so we'll stop there. You can do almost anything in an Oregon State Park. Most of what we do is to provide a place to explore opportunities, but we also work through our own staff with local businesses to provide special programs like guided hikes, basic camping instruction, boat rentals, and even bungee jumping now in one location. Unlike most state park systems in the United States, Oregon is not funded by taxes, but by lottery, a share of RV registrations, and visitor revenue. Visitor revenue must be earned by providing good service in a healthy, natural setting at a fair price. Staying current with the camping market is a challenge, given rates are tied to the budget cycle. But our customers, again, tell us that they would like that small, regular increase instead of long gaps between large spikes. Market comparisons show Oregon camping rates are regularly at the low end of the market, except for tent rates. Oregon system does not tend to provide a higher level of service for its tent. It does tend to provide a higher level of service for its tent campers, with hot showers and usually running water nearby. This budget includes a $2 increase in some kinds of camping, but leaves intact low rates for affordable tent camping to continue serving young families and people new to outdoor recreation. Once that center point is set, we are also looking for creative control over rates through House Bill 2318. This flexibility is to change rates during the year to allow us to selectively use higher rates in strong areas to fund deep discounts in rural areas with capacity. A small rate increase and the flexibility to set rates is important because as crowding at popular parks, especially in the summer, is an issue, we use these tools to help manage our traffic, opening up capacity to reach people who are new to outdoor recreation. Our second major issue relates to staff. After 10 years of asking staff to tread water while visits have increased 20%, we are finally biting the bullet and asking to rebuild the frontline field staff who deliver that service to those 100 million visitors every biennium and the staff who protect our natural and cultural resources. We realize that it's a challenging time to have that ask, but perhaps more than any other agency, the revenue that we earn is directly tied to the experience we provide. That's more about the facilities and acres. It's about the people serving people. Staff have already set aside high-priority maintenance to serve visitors, and we need to stop this alarming erosion of services and facilities now to prevent critical failures in the future. No new revenue sources needed to support this option package. Staffing and service are important, and so is our ability to maintain clean, efficient, modern facilities of our development as our development program continues our history of investing in facility repair and improvement. Increased authority to set fees flexibly throughout the year would add $1 million to this program. We target development on our oldest systems while simultaneously evaluating property and facilities to make sure we are maintaining the property that serves the public needs. We will continue to filter the system this way, building service in needed areas while reducing costs and efforts in low-reward areas. Most major projects require us to close at least part of a park during good weather. And as you've heard, the system is quite old and new maintenance needs are accumulating every day. We face a long-term challenge to fund improvements and repair in existing parks and have set this acquisition budget quite low, around 10% of this program's total budget. While we invest this money in a small number of forward-looking, legacy-oriented projects as opportunities become available.
I see you doing the break your intake.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're to the point that we would be bringing Chrissy up, but we thought that's a lot of talking at you. We thought maybe we would actually let you ask us some questions before we talk about the State Heritage Preservation Office program, or just...
Are there any questions?
Keep going.
No questions?
Okay.
All right.
That's my father.
It's all right. You're going to do my slides. Yep, okay. I'll drive.
Good afternoon, Chair Frederick and Chair Witt. For the record, my name is Chrissy Curran. I am the manager of the Heritage Unit and the State Historic Preservation Office at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Under this budget, recreation and heritage grant programs will send $37 million to local communities over the next 2 years.
Okay. Hey, you're good.
Local communities from Ontario to Astoria, from Klamath Falls to Fossil, from the smallest towns to the largest county, are not just our external customers. They are our program partners. They know what their needs are. We have the funding and expertise to help them get there. We don't just grant money. We also grant expertise and project planning assistance. Our grant coordinators hold regular workshops for applicants so they can prepare complete grant applications. And our program specialists offer subject matter expertise to ensure a successful project. Statewide strategic plans written with public involvement every few years guide both heritage and recreation programs. Data tracking and data interpretation across all our programs help us determine program effectiveness and lead to a culture of improvement and excellence. Historic preservation, museums, playgrounds, memorials, campgrounds, trails, athletic fields all benefit from the vigorous grant program supported by lottery and federal funds. While grants are important, and even small amounts can be transformative for communities and nonprofits, much of our work involves collaborating on the ground through public-private partnerships. Our heritage unit includes the State Historic Preservation Office, which administers the National Register of Historic Places, and the Main Street Downtown Preservation Network, and Archaeological Services. The image on the screen depicts one of our many Main Street events happening throughout the state as a result of our Main Street network. This is a farm-to-table event in 2016 sponsored by the Hillsboro Downtown Partnership, an Oregon Main Street Network organization. Regardless of their specialty, our staff understands the value of a suite of services that supports every Oregon community in their efforts to protect and promote their own unique identities. The idea is that once a community is plugged into our offerings, they can leverage the dollars, designations, and deliverables to strengthen the resources already existing in their community. This suite of services extends to property owners, businesses, local governments, and federal and state agencies in their efforts to comply with state and federal cultural resources laws. In one recent case, a local landowner approached us after discovering artifacts on his property. John Pauly, our assistant state archaeologist, worked with the landowner to help document the discovery, and Oregon Public Broadcasting covered the story, both for the value of the site itself, but also as a way to let other property owners know about the services we offer. Hang on just a sec.
This is OPB.
Oh. One little preamble to this. This is about a 7-minute audio file by Amelia Templeton at Oregon Public Broadcasting. She's the one who went out to the site. And I would be remiss if I didn't say for John Pauly, his name is pronounced Pauly, not Pooley, like she said. It drives him crazy. But it was a great story, and we're going to play it for you.
This is OPB. I'm Kate Davidson. Oregon's Cascade Mountains are a great place to find obsidian. That's a black volcanic glass useful for making sharp stone tools. So for thousands of years, Native Americans traveled to the Cascades to collect it. Now archaeologists are using obsidian to map what trade routes in the Pacific Northwest looked like thousands of years ago. OPB's Amelia Templeton tells the story of one recent find.
This story begins with a middle school math teacher named David. We're just using his first name because archaeological sites can attract unwanted visitors. David lives with his family on a suburban hillside not far from the Willamette River.
When I purchased this property, it was weed infested. There was 10 feet tall blackberry bushes. So I borrowed the neighbor's tractor and I cleared out these weeds.
It was the heat of summer, and David noticed the ground underneath the weeds was wet.
I was like, oh, this is actually a spring. Cool.
So we got a shovel to dig out the spring.
The next day I dig and I find this black obsidian stone. I thought, that's a neat rock. Kind of tossed it aside, kept digging.
He found another piece of obsidian. And then another. David wasn't sure what he'd discovered. So he took some pictures and sent them to a guy named John Pooley.
I'm still amazed that he did that.
Pooley is a deputy state archaeologist. He says most landowners don't report finding artifacts. They're afraid their land will get taken away, which, by the way, is a myth.
What we want to do is we want to help inform the landowner.
Back to David. He'd stumbled upon something rare, a cache of stone tools called bifaces. They're like a prehistoric Swiss Army knife. With a little work, archaeologist John Pooley says, a biface could be converted into a scraper or a spear point or an arrowhead.
Then you can also remove little flakes to have a sharp cutting edge to skin an animal that you know we're going to eat for dinner.
Pooley's best guess is that the tools are between 1,000 and 4,000 years old. They belonged to a member of the Santiam band of the Kalapuya tribe. Today the Kalapuya are part of the Grand Ronde. The tribe thanked David for reporting his discovery. They're making replicas of the bifaces with their 3D printer. And this summer, Pooley brought a team to David's property to do a formal excavation. Workers are digging two pits. It's slow going. A woman fills a dustpan with dirt and then hands it to a colleague who starts sifting. They've already found two more stone tools on the site. Some of David's students have come to watch the excavation.
It's awesome that there were actually humans living here.
Pooley's team is searching for tiny clues that could tell them about the person who left the collection of stone tools behind. A seed, a little charcoal from an ancient fire.
Somebody went to the trouble to make these a long ways away.
Obsidian forms during volcanic eruptions. It picks up trace chemicals as it forms. When archaeologists find stone tools, they can analyze those trace chemicals and reveal which obsidian flow the tool originally came from. That shows them how far the tool traveled after it was made. It's like having a tracking device. The tools found on David's property come from a prehistoric quarry 80 miles away, high in the Cascade Mountains.
They are from obsidian cliffs, so we know where they originated. We don't quite yet know how they got here.
Pooley points out another clue. The bifaces don't have any flakes missing. He suspects that the person who carried them down from the quarry wasn't planning to use them. He thinks that person might have been a traveling obsidian salesman.
It seems likely that this was part of a trade network and that these themselves were commodities.
Obsidian tools were just one of many specialty items tribes manufactured and traded. Their economies were more complex than most of us learned in school. For example, the Willamette Valley used to be thick with bright blue camas flowers. The Kalapuya people harvested tons of camas bulbs and baked them into cakes, which they traded with other tribes. The 14 stone tools David found in his backyard tell a little piece of that story, of large, prosperous tribes engaging in long-distance trade for specialty items. It's a far different story than the one written by the white settlers who came to the Willamette Valley on the Oregon Trail. By then, epidemics had killed virtually all the Kalapuya people. In just a few generations, about 95% of the native population in the Willamette Valley died, Connolly says.
A lot of the recorded history captures that moment and doesn't actually reflect the true nature of those native societies before the epidemics.
Back on the hillside, the state's archaeology team continues its careful digging. David's students ponder the 14 stone tools their teacher found. Why did somebody leave them thousands of years ago and never return?
Maybe they just dropped in value.
They could have been using them as a tool to fight, but they were abandoned in the fight.
I think there could have been a flood or something, so the Native Americans couldn't find them.
And then one of the kids has a more practical question for Pooley.
How much money would these bifaces be worth a piece?
I have no idea. No idea.
Their value, Pooley says, is in what we can learn from them. Amelia Templeton, OPB.
Are there any questions?
No, thank you. I don't think there are any questions. I'd like to go on another one of those digs, too. But,
we can set that up, Chair Frederick.
Yes.
Thank you.
My daughter was an archaeologist in school, and she found a Clovis spearhead when she was out on a dig. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I as a reporter, I went to probably 12 or so different digs in different places, out in North Powder, up in Skepoose, actually. Mm-hmm. Down in the valley, St. Paul, and places like that. So there are lots of good places. Oregon is just chock full of those. And it's great to see that group of fifth graders seeing that they're part of a lineage there of people in this area. So it's really good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Chair Frederick and Chair Witt and members of the committee, the landowner just happened to be a school teacher, which all the stars lined up on this one. Thank you.
Thank
cool
you.
Opportunity.
I wonder if all that meant the guy that was selling the obsidian, did he go broke and went bankrupt there?
That could be. That's always a possibility.
Lots of curious minds.
Okay. Do you have more for us?
We do.
I thought you might.
Chair Frederick, Chair Witt, for the record again, MG Devereaux, Deputy Director, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. While most of our department is concerned with providing the state park system and outdoor recreation and heritage services are co-equal in the contribution to Oregon's identity. We recognize the investment Oregon has made in state parks. When called to change to meet state's changing needs in the 1950s and 60s, we did it by adapting our facilities to start offering different services like camping. Now it's our turn to look at what needs to change and what needs shoring up. Before moving on to these big picture issues, I wanted to briefly mention one other unit of the department, and that's the central services. This includes the funding for our back office support, payroll, budgeting, IT, procurement, and public services like our toll-free information line, state park reservation customer service, websites, and publications, and it also includes our state assessments plus debt payments. Except for the Main Street Revitalization Grant Program administered by our Heritage Unit, these debt payments don't directly involve agency programs. We're passing through payments on lottery-backed bonds for projects at Willamette Falls and Forest Park in the Portland area. And with one exception, all debt service is paid by non-dedicated lottery funds. That exception is the state fair debt, which is paid with dedicated lottery funds. The department absorbed this debt burden when the legislature transferred the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center to the agency from 2006 to 2015 and will continue making payments until the last bond matures in 2018. The state fair, as worthwhile it is to the state as a whole, was a drain on staff time and agency funds, and there's no way to undo those decisions, and we felt we performed at a high level during the stint as fair manager, but those kinds of added responsibilities sapped our ability to focus on the core mission. The state fair is not the only program that the agency has tried to absorb. Main Street programs, Marine Reserves, State Capitol State Park, and all without additional staff.
You're good.
We face three key challenges moving into the future. First, we need funding that is as strong as our visitation. The state park system is under a tremendous amount of strain. This isn't a short-term or recent trend. The system is aging, and as we've mentioned, visits are up 20% in the last 5 to 10 years. In the traditionally slow fall, winter, and spring, it's up over 45% or more. Lottery funding has been vital to fund some maintenance and development needs, but none of our current funding sources are reliably strong. Together with park visitor revenue and the share of the RV registration, funding waxes and wanes with the economy, weather, and population dynamics. This is not just a state park problem, and we need to work more closely with cities, counties, and special districts to serve all of Oregon's outdoor recreation needs. It's important to our mental and physical health, our economy, and Oregon's identity. Without any general fund, and the state park system hasn't been tax-funded since 1999, this search continues for a funding source tied to Oregon's own growth. We don't have a proposal for you on that yet, but the small rate increases in this budget and flexibility to adjust rates up or down over the year will help. But we look for us to expand our partnerships with marketing as well. Second, we recognize what creates value in a state park system to make sure that we put our time and money into those strengths. A special place requires the care and attention of passionate, qualified staff. It was necessary in the past to focus nearly all of our attention on rebuilding and improving facilities, but parks aren't just pieces of land with fences and parking. People make the parks. In our case, frontline staff do two things that create the park experience. First, they serve the people. Especially for people new to the outdoors, a friendly, knowledgeable ranger helps people connect with their park. Second, people need healthy and natural landscapes. Healthy native plants, animals, waters, and historic features create powerful park experiences, and without them, a park loses its value. It takes people, trained, passionate, dedicated people, to make that happen. Yes, we use volunteers. Yes, we work with outside partners, but there are limits to what they can do. We know asking for staff in a state budget littered with cuts is courageous and maybe a little bit foolhardy. But we're not asking for additional funding sources. We are asking you to take the courageous step with us and recognize that the park system earns its revenue by delivering quality experiences, and that quality is driven by those staff that serve the visitors and those experiences. 10 years of increased service produce wear and tear on both facilities and frontline park staff, and it's time to give them some relief. We have a substantial staff request in the budget, and we agonized over it, as I'm sure you will as well. But in the end, we trust that you will approve it and send a clear message that parks are worth supporting.
Okay, we need to know. We know that we need to think and grow our thinking. Most state parks were designed and built in the 50s all the way through to the 70s. Oregon was different then, and not just demographically. We'll always serve that traditional family who the family camping crowd, but we need to keep an eye on people who play differently. We need to think about taking advantage of outdoor play for everyone. We need to evolve our thinking about where we create parks, how they're designed, and the services that they offer. Innovation starts by laying groundwork in Oregon's different communities, and we've already begun that outreach. Every Oregonian should feel welcome in their state park system, and we will get there through good design, thoughtful outreach, and good staff training and leadership. The same attitude applies to our heritage programs. As you heard, our success arises from partnerships and communities, and we'll continue to extend our reach, especially in rural areas. We know that if Oregonians love the system, they'll tend to take care of it. Whoops. Okay, we want to end with two reminders. First, Oregon will be the first spot in the nation to experience the total eclipse on August 21st, 2017. If you didn't know that, get that on your calendar to either be out of town or be somewhere in the path. Tens of thousands of Oregonians and visitors from all over the world will descend on Oregon State Parks to witness it.
I have property that
you might
on the coast.
So we're rolling out the welcome mat and shifting staff from other areas to provide service along the path of the eclipse from Newport to Ontario. We're State Parks Oregon gathering place since 1922 will have a whole different experience in it. And the second reminder we wanted to share with you, if you weren't aware and to get on your calendar, is in 2017 that will mark our 50th anniversary of the Beach Bill. Watch for celebrations both on the beach and here at the Capitol. We've had ideas of sandcastles on the Capitol Mall. Remember that past generations of Oregonians took action to protect this resource, and you're honoring their work by going out and relaxing on the beach. Take care of it, and we'll always be there for us and those come after us. So that is overall our presentation that we wanted to highlight for you. We're happy to get into discussion. I'm sure there were a lot more questions about the staff ask, the slight increase, flexible fees. We're happy to go into the other program areas to cover more of the...
Well, are there other questions?
I have a comment.
Oh, okay, a comment will do.
Since you brought it up, the hot topic of the state fair. I don't think we've done very well since we eliminated horse racing. And I know that's just a topic you don't want to go into, but it's just not adult friendly anymore. It's really, you know, it used to be, gave the kid $50 to go on the rides, and then you went and sat down and watched the horses. Now it's, I mean, you don't have any places to sit for adults, and I just don't see it as being very popular anymore. Maybe you have numbers that show different.
So, Coach yes. Frederick and Representative Witt, Senator Girard, we are we're happy to pass that information along to the Oregon State Fair. As of 2015, it is actually its own semi-independent public corporation. We struggled with a lot of those same conversations about what is the relevant type of entertainment to be providing at a fair. What are things that are going to make money that seem to make the most sense of what an Oregon State Fair should to bring, but we'll happily pass that along to them.
Did you have something, Representative? Yes.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Want
to turn your mic a little bit there.
Oh, wrong way. Anna.
Right, it is going wrong. There you go.
How much did we go in the hole in the State Fair that we had to absorb? Because I know you have to absorb it in your budget.
So, co-chairs, Representative Esquivel, we estimate that's about $60 million.
How much?
About $60 million.
Co-chairs Frederick and Witt, to clarify what going in the hole means, that's a diversion of lottery funds from what they could have been put to in the state park system for maintenance and operations. So, you know, we believe that money was spent well on operating the fair. It just was not part of our mission before it was given to us.
Any other questions?
I have one question.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. When you were in my office, I was inquiring about tent sites, because we know that there is a real shortage in the state for a certain number of you know, there's a lot of demand, people going online trying to get reservations for tent sites. And I was just wondering, in the budget going forward, if any more tent sites would be made available, or because the demand is up so much, and as you know, people are clamoring to get into the parks, but we don't necessarily always have enough space, and maybe not all the campgrounds can accommodate that. But are we trying to increase capacity somewhere in the state, or is there a plan? Or
so, co-chairs and Senator Taylor. So actually, with the flexible fee bill, we're actually hoping that we will be able to redisperse folks over the system.
Okay.
So there are many tent sites that are not available if you wanted to go to Fort Stevens, Silver Falls, but there, Cascadia State Park is one that probably would be in lieu of Silver Falls. There is room at Cascadia State Park, and could we offer deep discounts at Cascadia to be able to attract more people to a different, more tent primitive type experience. So we're really hoping to use this flexible fee model to actually drive people to places that are underutilized.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No?
Wow.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Do we have anything else?
Jennifer, is there?
Well, you know, I don't think people are going to get upset about saying this, that I will adjourn the meeting for this committee meeting, and we'll see you. Oh, no, wait one second. There is one other thing. I asked for a homework assignment, and you sent me something. Thank you very much. Mr. Helms, did you do your homework?
Senator Gerard did not.
What's the homework assignment?
I just wanted to get a sense of what particular agencies you were interested in.
Know what mine was.
Well, yours, that's right. Yeah. I didn't need to even ask that question. That's
without,
a good point.
Without further ado.
Representative Witt?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just kind of interested in the entirety of ag and natural resources combined, because they are the largest single economic sector in Oregon's economy, and so I think that it's very important for us at the legislature to make sure that we're working hand in hand with the folks that are making Oregon's economy run.
Thank you very much. And I just got a nice list from Senator Gerard.
He just wrote it. I signed.
Hey, he wrote it out. That's fine.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Senator, I'm interested in all of them. If there's something in particular, I mean, I really, they're all very important, and they all, one interesting thing about this committee is that between the 14 agencies, what happens with those agencies, they impact all Oregonians. It's kind of, there really isn't anybody who isn't affected by something that goes on, be it water, agriculture, Fish and Wildlife, something, it touches everybody, so I'm interested in all of them. But if there's something in particular?
That's what I was asking, if there was something in particular primarily. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. First, I need to close the public hearing on the Parks and Recreation. And I'm closing the public hearing, and then I'm going to adjourn this meeting until tomorrow. At 1 o'clock. Let me say that again. I'm adjourning the meeting until tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Okay.
You are a big.
I don't have detention that I can deal with, but
I told my coach.
Please, if you can make it, that would be helpful. Thank you very much. Take care. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
My check.
Take care. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.